Imagine downloading like a highly anticipated new app. You know, you open it up completely ready to experience whatever magic it promised you.
Right, you're excited to jump in.
Exactly. But before you are allowed to press a single functional button, you are handed a mandatory six-page creative writing assignment.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Do you stay and fill it out, or do you just, you know, force close the app and never look back?
I mean, I think we both know the answer to that.
Right. So today we are doing a deep dive into a really revealing developer's post. It's from a series called Rethinking Mio.
Yeah, specifically, we're looking at part one, which was published in March 2026.
Titled, "My Onboarding Was Killing My Product." And, you know, our mission today isn't just to talk about fixing some clunky interface. We're exploring how, like, a single user's complaint forced a developer to completely tear down and rebuild their fundamental model of how artificial intelligence and human beings should actually interact.
It's a huge shift, and the specific catalyst for this teardown was incredibly mundane.
Yeah, it really was.
It was just a beta tester for Mio, which is an AI companion app, and they sent the developer a really brief blank message.
What did it say again?
They literally just wrote, "Current onboarding is too much work. I just want to start chatting right away."
Wow. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the initial situation feels so deceptively small, you know.
Yeah, it does.
In software development, the standard reaction to that kind of feedback is to file it under what we call a UX polish item.
Right, like a nice to have.
Exactly. Meaning you treat it as a minor user experience
Wow.
issue. Maybe you make a button bigger or you add a little progress bar to make the wait feel shorter.
Just kind of gloss over it.
Yeah, but you don't question the underlying structure. It's like pulling up a piece of carpet to fix a single squeaky floorboard and suddenly realizing the joists underneath your house are running in the completely wrong direction.
That's a great way to put it.
The squeak was just the floor trying to warn you that the structural integrity of the entire building was compromised.
And that structural compromise was only discovered because of the developer's specific mindset at the time. I mean, context is critical here.
Right.
The developer notes they had just spent an exhausting week fixing a silent memory pipeline bug.
Okay, so to clarify for anyone unfamiliar, in AI architecture, a memory pipeline is basically the system that takes a user's conversation, extracts the important facts, and stores them in a database so the AI can recall them later.
Exactly. And a bug in that pipeline means the AI is basically suffering from amnesia.
Which is terrible for a companion app.
Right. And because it fails quietly in the background, a developer might not even notice it for days. So, having just survived that week-long headache, the developer was in this highly paranoid, hyper-vigilant state.
Just constantly looking over their shoulder.
Yeah, they were asking themselves, what else am I completely blind to? And that paranoia prevented them from just brushing off the beta tester's complaint. It forced them to actually look at their onboarding flow with, you know, fresh, highly critical eyes.
And what they saw was that they had essentially built a torture chamber for new users.
A literal gauntlet.
Yeah. They explicitly refer to it as the funnel nobody survives. Let's walk through this six-step gauntlet that a brand new user had to run through before they could actually use the app.
Let's hear it.
Okay, step one, choose a relationship mode. Are we talking romantic, friendship, mentor, or custom?
Seems simple enough.
Sure, but then step two, choose an interaction mode. Text only, voice-enabled, multimedia.
Okay, getting a bit more detailed.
Step three, choose a relationship type. Casual, deep, playful.
It's starting to pile up.
And then step four, and this is the real roadblock, write a backstory.
Oh, wow.
You literally had to type out a fictional history of how you, quote unquote, met your AI companion.
That is wild.
It is. Step five, pick a nickname for what the companion calls you. And finally, step six, tell the app all about yourself, your interests, your communication preferences, what you're looking for.
That's exhausting just listening to it.
Right. All six of these steps, requiring heavy decisions and actual creative writing, had to be completed before sending a single message.
And every single one of those steps represents an intense cognitive load.
Definitely.
Cognitive load is, you know, the amount of working memory and mental effort a user has to burn just to navigate your system. Clicking a checkbox is low cognitive load.
Super easy.
But inventing a fictional backstory from scratch, that is an incredibly high cognitive load.
Yeah, that takes real effort.
You are asking the brain to switch from passive consumption to active, demanding creation. And when you stack six of those demands back to back, you aren't just creating a barrier, you are actively exhausting the user before the experience has even begun.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for a second here, because I completely understand the developer's original logic.
Sure.
In the tech industry, we often talk about necessary friction. Like, yeah. If I download a complex dating app, I know I have to spend 30 minutes writing a bio, uploading photos, answering personality quizzes.
Right, you put in the work.
Exactly. It's a massive upfront cost.
Right.
But I do it because I want a highly tailored payoff later. Isn't a heavy upfront cost necessary if you want an AI companion to provide a deeply personalized experience right out of the gate?
I see where you're going with this.
It feels like forcing someone to plan out the catering and the venue for their wedding before they are allowed to go on a first date.
That's a strong analogy.
Right. The logic being, if we plan the wedding perfectly now, the first date will be flawless.
Well, the assumption that users will endure heavy friction for a hypothetical future reward is, honestly, one of the most common delusions in product design.
Really?
A delusion.
Absolutely. And your wedding analogy highlights exactly why the logic fails. You cannot demand commitment before you have demonstrated value.
Okay, fair point.
The downstream payoff is entirely theoretical to a new user. You can have the most sophisticated, highly tailored AI companion waiting at the end of that onboarding tunnel. But if the tunnel is lined with complex decision trees and creative writing assignments, the user is just going to abandon the journey. They'll just turn around.
Exactly. Friction is only tolerated if the user already trusts that the reward on the other side is actually worth their time. A first-time user who just downloaded your app 3 minutes ago has absolutely zero trust in your product.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, theoretical debates about user trust and necessary friction, they usually end the moment you look at the hard metrics.
Always. The numbers don't lie.
They really don't.
Yeah.
And the developer didn't just rely on gut feelings here. They went looking for external data on onboarding friction. And the numbers they uncovered were just brutal.
Yeah. The external research they cite thoroughly dismantles that necessary friction argument. They analyzed experiments conducted by Coinbase, which tracked user behavior during the account creation process.
And what did they find?
Coinbase found that for every additional 60 seconds of onboarding time, user drop-off increased by 40%.
40%, that is a staggering metric.
It's massive. If your onboarding takes 2 minutes instead of one, nearly half of your potential users simply walk away.
Just gone.
Gone. Furthermore, they looked at data from the Design Community Prototyper, which documented a 53% lift in day one retention simply by reducing friction.
Wow.
And that massive increase in retention didn't come from upgrading the core technology or adding some flashy new feature. It came strictly from removing obstacles and letting the user access the product faster.
So what does this all mean? Let's take those industry baseline numbers and apply them to Mio's six-step creative writing gauntlet.
Yeah, let's run the math.
The developer did exactly that. They assumed, very generously, that a highly motivated user could blast through those six complex steps in 2 to 3 minutes.
Which is pretty fast for writing a backstory.
Super fast. But even using conservative drop-off rates for each step, the mathematical model estimated an 80 to 95% abandonment rate.
That is just heartbreaking for a developer.
Up to 95% of the people who downloaded this app were quitting before they sent their very first text message.
What's fascinating here is the tragic irony embedded in those numbers. I mean, consider the core value proposition of Mio.
Right.
The entire selling point is that it is an AI that learns about you, it remembers your quirks, and organically builds a relationship over time.
That's the whole point of the app.
That is the technological magic of the product. Yet, because of the onboarding design, that magic was completely invisible to 95% of the audience.
We never even saw it.
No. They were bouncing during the configuration phase, abandoning the app before they ever interacted with the system they were configuring. They were being asked to define the parameters of a relationship they hadn't even begun to experience.
The realization of that 95% drop-off proved the onboarding was broken on a mechanical level. But the true breakthrough came when the developer shared these horrific numbers with that original beta tester.
Yeah, the tester who started this whole thing.
Right. And the tester's response to the data is what triggered the massive pivot. They replied, "This doesn't only apply to onboarding. It's an overall product philosophy overhaul."
And that phrase points directly to the underlying conceptual framework of the software. I mean, the failure wasn't merely that there were too many screens or that the forms were too long.
It was deeper than that.
Much deeper. The fundamental flaw was the developer's assumption that a user should be the one configuring the AI's personality.
Right.
Think about the mechanical absurdity of what Mio was demanding. The app asks you to choose a relationship mode before you even know what the AI's baseline personality feels like.
Yeah, how could you possibly know?
Exactly. It asks you to pick an interaction style before you've tested its voice capabilities. The product was essentially outsourcing its own job to the user.
You do the work for us.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The AI is designed to adapt and get to know you, but the onboarding flow demanded that the user spoon-feed the AI a summarized, statically defined version of themselves up front.
It's like treating the user as a customer at a fast food counter.
Okay, yeah.
Under the old framework, configure first, chat later, you walk up to a static menu. You fill out a form, you make your selections, and you just hope you ordered the right combination of personality traits.
And if you didn't, you're kind of stuck.
Exactly. You are forced to make permanent decisions without having any context for what those decisions actually feel like in practice. And because of that, the product feels entirely rigid.
The new mental model shifts away from that transactional fast food dynamic entirely. The new framework is based on organic emergence.
Organic emergence.
Yeah. Instead of treating the user like a customer filling out a form at a counter, the software treats the user like a guest being introduced to someone new at a friend's party.
Oh, I like that.
When you are introduced to someone at a gathering, you do not hand them a 6-page questionnaire detailing your communication preferences, your relationship goals, and your backstory.
Hi, nice to meet you. Please review my documentation.
Exactly. You simply say hello. You engage in a natural conversation. The parameters of that relationship reveal themselves dynamically over time based on mutual interaction. The developer realized that Mio had to stop functioning like a traditional utility app with a settings menu and start functioning like an actual relationship simulator.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the difference between those two approaches changes the entire tone of the user experience.
Completely.
The old method, filling out that massive profile, is the equivalent of reading a dry, bulleted Wikipedia page about a person before you're allowed to speak to them.
Here are my interests. Here's my backstory. Please confirm.
Right. It's sterile.
Yeah.
But the party guest approach is like just sitting down and having a coffee with someone to see where the conversation naturally goes.
Mm-hmm.
You learn they like jazz because a jazz song plays in the background and they mention it, not because they selected a checkbox labeled jazz fan from a drop-down menu.
That distinction right there between declared data and observed data is absolutely crucial. But, you know, a conceptual epiphany about coffee dates and party guests means nothing if the developer can't actually engineer it into the software.
Yeah, how do you actually build that?
The operational challenge was immense. How do you take an AI system that relies on 5 minutes of dense data entry to function and re-engineer it into an instant organic relationship?
Well, the answer was taking a machete to the entire process. They stripped the onboarding down to a completely new flow that takes less than 30 seconds to complete.
30 seconds? That's incredible.
It is. The new reality is brilliantly simple. Step one. You tap a persona card that looks visually interesting. Step two, you tap a button that says, let's meet.
Simple enough.
Step three, the AI persona sends the very first message. And step four, you're chatting.
That's it.
That is the entirety of the new onboarding. In under 30 seconds, the user is experiencing the core magical value of the product.
But taking away those forms entirely forces us to look at the mechanical layer underneath. If the AI is no longer handed a customized cheat sheet about the user, how does it know what to do?
Right. How does it learn?
How does it know your name or your preferences?
Yeah.
The solution loops us right back to the beginning of the story, the memory pipeline.
Oh, the bug that started it all.
Exactly. Every single piece of data that was previously forced out of the user through a form is now extracted seamlessly in the background. Technically, this involves the AI's natural language processor monitoring the chat, identifying key entities like a nickname or a hobby, and passing that information to a vector database.
Got it.
So instead of presenting a sterile text box asking for your name during setup, the AI's language model is prompted to naturally ask, hey, what should I call you? During the flow of the first conversation.
Oh, that's so much more natural.
Right. And when you answer, the invisible memory pipeline captures it, stores it, and the AI never has to ask again.
But let me push back on the reality of implementing that. While it sounds incredibly elegant to just let the memory pipeline do all the work,
yeah.
Doesn't this put an immense, almost unfair amount of pressure on the AI's language model to be perfectly socially intelligent right out of the gate?
That is a very valid concern.
Because without a form, We aren't telling the AI if we want a deep philosophical relationship or a light casual one. If the AI misreads the tone and gets it completely wrong in those first five messages, won't the user just get frustrated and delete the app anyway? The AI is essentially flying blind.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of user engagement, that concern is totally understandable, but it misses the primary directive of software adoption. Value must be delivered immediately.
Okay.
Yes, the AI is operating with minimal context in those first few messages, but the user is already engaged in the core activity of chatting. They are inside the product, not staring at a configuration screen.
That's true. They're actually using it.
Exactly. Furthermore, personalization is not a static state you achieve by filling out a form. It is an ongoing process. If the AI gets the tone slightly wrong, perhaps it acts too formal and the user organically corrects it by saying, hey, you don't need to be so stiff. Let's keep it casual. That correction actually builds the relationship.
It gives them something to talk about.
It does. It demonstrates to the user in real time that the AI is listening, learning, and adapting. Capturing that preference through dynamic conversation creates a vastly more authentic connection than demanding the user define the tone via a drop-down menu before the conversation even begins.
It completely inverts how the tech industry traditionally thinks about user profiles.
Mm.
We are so conditioned to believe that setting up our profile is the mandatory toll we have to pay to use software.
It's just accepted as standard practice.
Yeah. But this developer discovered that the toll booth itself was actually destroying the highway.
That's a perfect way to summarize it.
So I want to ask you listening to this deep dive right now to reflect on the systems you design or participate in. Look at your own work, the projects you manage, or even your personal relationships. Are you demanding configuration from people before you deliver any actual value?
It's a great question to ask yourself.
Are you forcing people to jump through complex hoops, prove their interest, and learn your intricate systems before you actually show them why they should care? Because if you are relying on the myth of necessary friction, you might be losing 95% of your audience before the real conversation even has a chance to begin.
This raises an important question, something deeply compelling to consider as AI companions become more integrated into our daily lives.
What's that?
Well, we have explored how systems like Mio are shifting away from static forms and moving toward organic observation, learning about us purely by analyzing our conversational habits and behaviors.
Right, which sounds great on the surface.
It does. But consider the psychological implications of that shift. On a traditional form, you control the narrative. You have the power to present your idealized self.
You can be whoever you want to be.
Exactly. But as these AI memory pipelines become more sophisticated, they're going to draw conclusions about our personalities, our hidden biases, and our emotional blind spots based on how we actually behave rather than how we wish to be perceived.
Hmm.
Yeah. If we are no longer explicitly configuring our own digital avatars, what happens when an AI companion eventually figures out who we really are rather than who we claim to be?
That is a staggering thought to leave on. The idea that the AI's observed profile of you might be far more accurate and perhaps more exposing than the polished profile you would have written for yourself.
It's a little unsettling, honestly.
It really is. It proves that you never really know what you are going to uncover when you start pulling up a squeaky floorboard.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you hammer in a new nail, and sometimes you have to tear down the entire structure
mm-hmm.
and rethink the foundation of how we connect.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into product design, cognitive load, and human-AI interaction. We will leave you to mull over that final thought about your own digital reflection.